Program. How you doing? Did you have enough? You know, I've never seen a touchdown made before in any football game with a football player's ass. I've never seen that happen before. Apparently, he was what's his name? The Giants guy was told, okay, just get right up there, and don't get the touchdown because then there'll be enough time left for those rotten ass Patriots to come back. So just go up to the line and stop right there, and we'll kick it in for a field goal. And, you know, blah. He just couldn't handle it. He couldn't do it. He got right up the line. He had a hole as big as Idaho to go through, and he gets up to the line and just slides his ass over the goal line. I just couldn't believe it. I cracked up. I spit guacamole all over my friend's living room when I saw that. Where were we? Oh, yeah. This hour is sponsored by Patricia, who writes, "Hi, Mike, please add government assaults upon our wildlife to your outrage list." Wildlife Services, the Slayer branch of the Department of Agriculture, are the worst. Even ravens and blackbirds, not to mention wolves and coyotes, shot, strangled, poisoned, and trapped by the thousands. Get the facts at wildearthguardians.org. From Trish. We'll call her Trish. Thanks, Trish. WildEarthGuardians.org. Thanks for the sponsorship, Trish. Well, I mentioned this last week in Catholic masses all over the country. Priests are, with absolutely no holds barred, just injecting politics into their sermons. See, the Catholic Church is bigger than... How many of the Supreme Court justices are Catholic now? Six? We have six Catholics. I think we have two Jews. Do we have two Jews, six Catholics? No Protestants. Or is it six? Is it seven and two? I don't know. A lot of Catholics on the Supreme Court. Anyway, they're condemning Obama for the new health and human service regulations that religious institutions must offer insurance that has contraceptive benefits to its members. It doesn't require members to violate their personal beliefs by taking advantage of that, mind you. They're just saying the insurance covers contraception. Now, Catholic Church, I suggest this last week. Catholic Church, why don't you do this? I mean, God knows you can afford it. Why don't you self-insure? Why don't you get the Pope and the rest of the College of Cardinals involved in the insurance business? In a sense, you already are. The insurance you offer is, you know, somebody's immortal soul. And you don't give anybody a choice. You don't give anybody a chance. You just say, believe this way or your ass is going to burn in hell forever. And that includes everybody. Catholic, Protestant, Jew, Muslim, everybody. So you people are complaining because there is a provision in health insurance that has to cover contraception, and you're falling back on your asses now like the guy that scored the touchdown going, oh, it's an attack against my freedom of religion. Blah! Suggestion, self-insure. Don't buy it. And if you have insurance that carries with it contraception, don't use it. Why is that so difficult for religious blockheads to understand? Anthony Piccirillo, General Counsel of the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops, yes, they have a lawyer, said the White House information about this is a combination of misleading and wrong. Yeah, it's, you know, they're going to come into every church in America with guns and force people to not just buy contraceptives, but to eat them, too. They're going to stand right there with Uzis and say, all right, put them in your mouth. All right, swallow. That's what they're going to do. That's how they make it sound. So Anthony Piccirillo, the general counsel, he said that the bishops would pursue every legal mandate available to them to bring an end to this mandate. That means legislation, litigation, and public advocacy. All options are on the table. You will not force our women to eat birth control pills. You won't! And that's what you're doing. You're forcing our women to eat birth control pills. You secular Muslim bastard or whatever Obama is. The new regulations were announced last month by the Department of Health and Human Services as part of an effort to guarantee that women receive free preventive health care services, including cervical cancer screenings, breast pumps, and contraception. The new rules require employers to include those services in their employee health insurance plans by August. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. In a blog post last Wednesday, the White House responded that the new rules won't force anyone to buy contraceptives. They really won't. They won't. Cecilia Munoz, director of the Domestic Policy Council, wrote, quote, over half of Americans already live in the 28 states that require insurance companies to cover contraception, end quote. The Catholic bishops shot back on Friday, saying it was misleading to say that no one be forced to buy contraceptives because everyone who contributes to an insurance plan will be paying a portion of the subsidy that provides for free contraception. Oh, my God. No, no. Saints Preservis. You mean we're going to? Oh, no. Oh, oh. Out of curiosity, Nicole Bell, writing at Crooks and Liars, writes, out of curiosity, are the bishops equally against erectile dysfunction drugs like Viagra? Yeah, are they? Why do I hear no denouncing of working against God's plan there? If God doesn't want you to get an erection, what the hell are you doing taking a pill? If God says, keep it soft, brother, what are you doing going against God's word? This is madness. This is insanity. This is a bunch of religious psychopaths screaming that they are under assault when they, in fact, are the ones doing the assaulting. Leave your penis alone. God wants it flaccid. No, I want it to be, you know, erect. No. If God wanted erect, it'd be erect. Am I wrong, or does there seem to be a double standard here? If God doesn't want your penis erect, sir, that probably means he doesn't want you, especially since you're Catholic and all you do is have sex for babies, he doesn't want you to become a parent or a parent again. He's telling you, leave it alone. So if you go ahead and take a pill that makes it, you know, baby capable, aren't you defying your God? No? How's that possible? I'm sorry, I'm not a Catholic. I don't understand the particular brand of insanity that you people follow, but it sounds to me like you're violating God's plan by eating a ED pill. Oh, well. 98% of Catholics admit to using contraception anyway, so they're all going to burn in hell. Do you know how crowded hell's going to be?
Now there's lots of folks firing, and even more is firing. shackles and cast in mortar tricks and truck than you and I could ever hope to try. They got four-wheel drives to turn, credit cards just burning, seeking kicks and highs on which you can't rely. There's just one thing satisfying. He's the one who did our dying, and he's a waiting man with that city in the sky. Now there's lots of folks have been thanking that real joy it comes from drinking at the well of pleasures that the world provides. But the fleet hides their feeling.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Religion is under attack in America, don't you know? This guy really had a bad day last week. I can't think of anything that would be more disturbing. A worker at the San Onofre Nuclear Generating Station fell into the plant's Unit Number 2 reactor pool last week. He did. Southern California Edison spokesman Gil Alexander said that the worker, quote, momentarily lost his balance, end quote, and fell into the pool January 27th while leaning over to retrieve a flashlight. The pool is more than 20 feet deep and holds water that continually circulates through the reactor core. Oh, officials said he did not suffer significant radiation exposure. Oh, my God. Really? Well, I don't know. Let me see. Michael in Roswell will let me know if that's bad. I have no idea. Falling into a nuclear reactor cooling pool 20 feet deep that holds, I don't know why I'm laughing. That's not funny. That holds water that continually circulates through the reactor core. Michael! Is this bad? How many testicles do you want? Whew. This is a guy that get out with glowing testicles. What else? Oh, another Democrat betrayal. Yeah, Democrat betrayal by the Democrats in the Democratic Party. This is a big one, too. The Senate passed a bill today that includes an anti-union measure that has been opposed by union groups. It's the Federal Aviation Administration bill, the FAA bill, right? Now, the bill, which, modernizes America's air traffic control system, which desperately is needed, and funds the FAA through 2014. Remember, it was Republicans, these filthy pig Republicans, who refused to fund any more money for the FAA a couple of months ago. So anyone who was flying at the time was, taking a bit of a risk, don't you think? It's been fought over for 4 years now. And this bill passed 75-20, which means very clearly a majority of Democrats in the Senate supported it. Now, among the controversial provisions were changes to labor law for rail and airline workers. This law was backed, of course, by the airline industry. But here's one of the provisions. Controversial? Do you think this is controversial? Anyone who does not vote in an election for a union is counted as voting against it. Do you get that? Anyone who does not vote in favor of a union will be counted as voting against it. Why? then most elections in the United States are invalid because most people don't vote. Oh, my God. When was the last time a representative in your district was elected with 32% of the vote, of the turnout? I don't mean the vote. Well, you might have gotten 90% of the vote, but 32% of the turnout. 48% of the turnout. 51%. 16%. We have runoffs in Georgia where 6% of eligible voters will turn out. Oh, my God. So there you go. The Democratic Party voted for this. Now, that measure was stripped in a conference committee to work out differences between the Senate and House versions of the bill, but it was replaced when, I guess, everybody left. Everybody left the room? Unions mounted a last-minute push against the measure today, including sending out a letter signed by 19 labor groups hammering Democrats for giving into the House. Democrats in the Senate. The letter said in part, it was partially written by the Communications Workers of America. It said, regarding the House Republican leadership's desire to rewrite decades of longstanding labor law in a flash by inserting an unrelated and controversial labor provision in a much-needed aviation safety and security bill without notice, without hearing, without debate, sets an extremely dangerous precedent. That could qualify as the leading understatement of the year so far.
Revolution starts right now. Here's Mike Malone.
This hour is sponsored by Trish. Her message. Trish writes, hi, Mike. Please add government assaults upon our wildlife to your outrage list. Wildlife Services, the Slayer branch of the Department of Agriculture. Ooh, the Slayer branch. Are the worst. Even ravens and blackbirds, not to mention wolves and coyotes, are shot, strangled, poisoned, and trapped by the thousands. Get the facts at wildearthguardians.org. Wildearthguardians.org. Thanks, Trish. Senators who voted for this bill that once again, the assault on organized labor, of course, is full frontal assault by Democrats as well as Republicans. Don't kid yourself. A lot of Democrats who are in the House and the Senate are dinos, Democrats in name only. I guess that they see it as job security because they happen to come from districts back home that used to be manufacturing districts, used to have union labor, union membership, maybe still has a few. So they play this sickening goddamn game, these Democrats. They all ought to be, have their asses. These Democrats should be turned out of office, the next election, which comes up in November. Of course, they won't. They'll just continue to do their destruction right along with the Republicans. But anyway, in the Senate, you know, I'm talking about the House, but now the Senate, senators who voted for the bill included Senator Jay Rockefeller, a Democrat of West Virginia, the Senate, the chairman of the Senate Commerce Committee. He praised this bill as a good compromise. Rockefeller said, quote, I happen to think it's a very, very good bill, end quote. Senator Tom Harkin, Democrat of Iowa, voted against it, said, quote, the only entity that the old union vote system apparently doesn't work for is the management of a few powerful airlines. These powerful companies don't want workers to have representation. They don't want to engage in collective bargaining with their workers. They're deeply concerned, I guess, that at some point in the future, they just might have to put a few additional dollars into middle-class workers' pockets. End quote, Tom Harkin. The bill, now here comes the good part. Here comes the really, really good part. This is where you Obama supporters will have a chance to see your president in action. And because the bill now goes to him for his signature. Now, I hate to bring up facts. I know a lot of liberals or progressives or Democrats just hate facts. I found this to be true back during the 2008 presidential contest between Obama and Hillary Clinton. If I presented facts about Senator Obama, progressives and liberals and Democrats would call me a racist dumbass. If I presented facts about Hillary Clinton, liberals and progressives and feminists would call me a woman-hating bastard. So I've discovered that, and forget the Republicans, I'm talking about Democrats, progressives, liberals. So it's, you know, I expect, always expect people to go just totally ape droppings whenever I say what I'm about to say, but I'll say it anyway. The bill now goes to President Obama for his signature. What do you want to bet he signs it? This is the man who said regarding labor issues, well, if there's any labor trouble out there, you know, get up, put on a pair of comfortable shoes and go march with them. Oh, I'm sorry. I'm not supposed to bring that up. Ooh, that's playing unfair. That's like criticizing the Israelis for their policies against the Palestinians. Oh, well, you must be an anti-Semite. Oh, you must be a Democrat hater. Oh, you must be a closet conservative if you're going to bust up on Democrats, and especially our sainted president, who's only doing the best he can with that terrible bunch of Republicans. Well, anyway, you'll know in a day or two whether or not your president really is interested, as he said he was, in supporting organized labor, or if he's not. Let's wait and see what he does, huh? And if he doesn't sign it, I will come on the program and say, mea culpa, mea culpa, mea culpa. If he does sign it, will you accept the fact that this president is no more interested in organized labor than he's interested in bad athlete's foot? Story to tell you. 6 months before the space shuttle Challenger exploded over Florida on January 28, 1986, Roger Beaujolais wrote a memo. A portentous memo, the New York Times says in his obituary. He warned that if the weather was too cold, that the seals connecting sections of the shuttle's huge rocket boosters could fail. He wrote in the memo, quote, the result could be a catastrophe of the highest order, loss of human life, end quote. The memo. A memo was meant to jolt Morton Thiokol. Remember them? You have to be over a certain age to have that name mean anything. The company that made the boosters and employed Mr. Beaujolais. In July 1985, 6 months before, a task force had been formed, partly on Mr. Beaujolais' recommendation, to examine the effect of cold on the booster rockets. The effort, however, had become mired in paperwork, procurement delays, and a rush to launch the shuttle, according to later investigations. They wanted to launch it right around the time of Ronald Reagan's inaugural, you see, his second one. Was it his second? No, not his second one. A speech, that's right. Reagan was going to give this speech. Okay. Meanwhile, Mr. Beaujolais' apprehensions grew. The night before the Challenger's liftoff, the temperature dipped below freezing. Unusual for Florida, the cold was unprecedented for a shuttle launching. And it prompted Mr. Beaujolais and other engineers to plead, beg, that the flight be postponed. Their bosses, under pressure from the government, rejected the advice. Who was the government then? The shuttle exploded 73 seconds after launching, killing its 7 crew members, including Krista McAuliffe, the high school teacher from Concord, New Hampshire. Mr. Beaujolais' memo was soon made public. He became widely known as a whistleblower in a federal investigation of the disaster. And even though he was hailed for his action by many, he was also made to suffer for it. Corporate America, capitalism, just does not like people like Mr. Beaujolais. He died in Nephi, Utah, on January 6th. A couple of weeks ago. He was 73. His death was reported only locally at the time. He lived in southwest Utah. His wife, Roberta, said he recently learned that he had cancer in his colon, kidneys, and liver. Until the Challenger disaster, Mr. Beaujolais was known in his field as a crackerjack troubleshooter who had worked for companies in California on lunar module, life support systems, and the moon vehicle. In 1980, he accepted a cut in pay to move with his family to Utah to deepen his involvement in the Mormon religion and to join Morton Thiokol. After the Challenger explosion, Mr. Beaujolais gave a presidential commission investigating the disaster internal corporate documents. His disclosure of the internal memo he had written 6 months before the disaster was regarded as a, no pun intended, bombshell. Mr. Beaujolais was awarded the Prize for Scientific Freedom and Responsibility by the American Association for the Advancement of Science. And he spoke to more than 300 universities and civic groups about corporate ethics. He became sought after as an expert in forensic engineering. But before then, he had paid the stiff price often exacted of whistleblowers. Thiokol cut him off from space work, and he was shunned by colleagues and managers. He had headaches, double vision, and depression. He yelled at his dog, his wife said, and his daughters, and he skipped church to avoid people. He filed 2 suits against Morton Thiokol. Both were dismissed. He later said he was sustained by a single gesture of support, just one. Sally Ride, the first American woman in space, hugged him after his appearance before the commission. He told Newsday in 1988 she was the only one. The only one. Mr. Beaujolais worked for 27 years in the aerospace industry, but it was one night and one moment that stood out. On the night of January 27, 1986, Mr. Beaujolais and 4 other Thiokol engineers used a teleconference with NASA to beg them to delay the next day's launching because of the cold. The next morning, Mr. Beaujolais watched the launching. If there was going to be a problem, he thought, it would come at liftoff. As the shuttle cleared the tower, his prayers seemed answered. 13 seconds later, it blew up. So who will remember Mr. Beaujolais? Who will remember what really happened? How Morton Thiokol executed those astronauts in order to satisfy Rattle Dragon? Who will remember that? Nobody.
What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. I think it's time we stop. Children, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going down. There's battle lines being drawn. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speak in their minds.
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
10 before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by Trish. Thank you, Trish. Here's your message. Mike, please add government assaults upon our wildlife to your outrage list. Wildlife Services, the Slayer branch of the Department of Agriculture, are the worst. Even ravens and blackbirds, not to mention wolves and coyotes, are shot, strangled, poisoned, and trapped by the thousands. Get the facts at wildearthguardians.org. Wildearthguardians.org. Thank you, Trish. Reagan, somebody sent me an email. The reason Morton Thiokol refused to stop the shuttle launch, the Challenger launch, was because Reagan was to give State of the Union address a couple of days later or that night, and he wanted to have the thrill of talking with the astronauts while he was, live, while he was doing the State of the Union. And therefore, even though, the engineer who had reported 6 months earlier, this guy Beaujolais had reported 6 months earlier, please don't do this. And even though the night before, four engineers tried to talk NASA into stopping it, even so, corporate America, capitalist America, Morton Thiokol, and their slave at the time, Ronald Reagan, said, nah, go ahead. We want this little bit of PR for the Gipper. And as a result, all the astronauts died. But that, that's just one more example, isn't it? Huh? Yeah? From Kevin, Mike, your idea about the church self-insuring is actually a good idea. Imagine a religion such as the Catholics creating an insurance plan for all their members. It would be the ultimate in making sure that everyone, quote, would have insurance, at least all the Catholics. The reason they don't, I have no idea. This would actually be more in line with what Jesus preached. You know, if you see your brother or sister hungry, then feed him or feed her. But they would rather bitch about some phantom discrimination against them by a health care act that does seek to insure everyone. Kevin. Oh, yeah. It's just so, so grossly obvious what's, what the agenda is. The agenda is this attack on anything that doesn't smell like the Christian religion. Anything. Now, the Jews may think they've gotten a pass because the Christians really depend on the Jews to continue to butcher Arabs in Palestine because that's the only way Jesus is going to come back. I mean, this is really sick stuff. But if the Catholic Church is really so concerned about their female members eating birth control pills, form a self-insurance company. Come on, the Catholic Church is one of the richest, if not the richest, institution that's not a corporate. Well, is it? I don't know. On Earth, I think you boys could afford to do it, couldn't you? Oh, God. But no, go after the Muslim in the White House. Yeah. The march to war with Iran continues. I guess you've been following this. In a letter to Congress today, President Obama was talking about the new sanctions that he has ordered on Persia, including its central bank. This is a move to enforce the law he signed back in December. In this letter to Congress today, Obama said the tougher sanctions are warranted, quote, particularly in light of the deceptive practices of the Central Bank of Iran and other Iranian banks, end quote. He said the problems included the hiding of transactions of sanctioned parties, the deficiencies of Iran's anti-money laundering regime, and the unacceptably high risk posed to the entire international financial system posed by Iran's activities. Now, let me think for a second. Let's go back a couple of years. Was it Iran's financial activities that goddamn near brought the entire financial structure of the earth into a collapse? Was that Iran? No, let me think. Was it Chavez's Venezuela? No. Was it Russia? No, it wasn't Russia. Whose banking practices damn near collapsed the entire banking system? The global. Everything. Oh, that was ours! Did the other countries around the earth impose sanctions on the U.S.? Why, of course not, booby. But Iran? Well, Iran. There's a very high risk posed to the entire international financial system because of Iran's activities, Mr. Obama said. Oh, my God. The central bank sanctions, according to what I have here, were included as an amendment in the defense bill that Obama signed into law at the end of 2011. That was the NDAA. You remember that? Of course you do. The White House said Obama signed the executive order approving the sanctions yesterday, well ahead of the six-month window that was in the defense bill. Well, you know, it's re-election time, and as Obama said, he needs to he needs to be reelected because he deserves it. Oh, well. We'll be back after the break. Stick around. I think we have a break here. Don't we have a break here?
10 seconds.
Oh, 10 seconds. Okay, 9, 8, 7. There we go. We'll be right back. Stay with us. We have much more fun and frivolity coming up. I'm Mike Malloy. The hour. This hour is sponsored by the Gandalf Society. Is that it? The expert slayer of right wing orcs, ditto heads, and the flying monkey right wing. The Gandalf Society. Okay. Ooh. I guess that's about all I can tell you about the march towards war with Iran. It's just astonishing to me that, you know, Obama doesn't need a war. Somebody should tell him, Mr. President, it's not like George Bush. It's not like Dick Nixon. It's not like Bill Clinton. You don't need a war. You really don't. As a matter of fact, this one could be the last one. You know what I'm saying here, Mr. Barack Obama, President, sir? Obama said Sunday, he was interviewed by Matt Lauer right before the Super Bowl, of course. He said he doesn't believe Israel has yet decided whether to attack Iran. And he, Mr. Obama, still believes a diplomatic solution is possible. Iran insists that its nuclear pursuit is for peaceful purposes, but the West, that would be the United States, Europe, and Israel, the West accuses Iran of developing the know-how to build a nuclear bomb. Oh, you can't even have the know-how. Okay. Okay. Pakistan has the know-how, and Israel has the know-how, and the U.S. has the know-how, and Russia. These are all countries that most literally, but U.S. figuratively, surrounds Iran. But Iran is not supposed to. Look, I'm against all nuclear weapons. Let's get rid of them all. Let's build a starship. I know, this is terrible. Let's build a starship. Let's build one that will, they can engineer it so it never hits anything. It just goes for a billion years. And load all the nuclear weapons onto it and launch it. If it fails on launch, if Morton Thiokol is involved, well, then goodbye. I mean, you can't be in favor of nuclear weapons unless you are clinically mad, unless you are truly insane. Christians like them because their belief is that it will hurry up the return of their Messiah. But for the nuclear bomb-wielding nations to tell Iran, no, no, doors close, no admission, no girls allowed, you can't come in, is insane. It's even more insane than having the weapons to begin with. We have them, but you can't. And to the question, why not? Because you're irrational. We're not. Oh. Isn't a sign of irrationality having 9,000 nuclear warheads at one's disposal, as we do here, or 7 or 11,000 nuclear warheads at the disposal of the Russians, or 500 at the disposal of the Chinese, or 2 at the disposal of the North Koreans, or 200 or 300 or 400 at the disposal of the Israelis? Isn't all of that insanity? Isn't all of that irrational? So in this sea, this ocean of irrationality, comes the little voice that says, Iran, you don't have them yet, and you can't have them. Oh, my God. So since the Iranians apparently just won't listen, they just keep working on their nuclear energy program. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Since they won't listen, well, then it's time to destabilize their currency, ruin their international credit, just destroy them, destroy the bastards. You know, we've been assassinated, we being, you know, not Iran. Although there's an argument made that Iranian dissidents are being executed by the Iranian crazy people. The dissidents being the nuclear engineers and scientists who are saying, maybe we shouldn't do this. On the other hand, the more acceptable theory is that the U.S. and or Israel, or Israel and or the U.S. are slowly assassinating and sabotaging Iran's nuclear power industry, as nascent as it is. So, I don't know. It's just crazy. Crazy. Oh, well. This is kind of interesting. This is at smirkingchimp.com. Sherwood Ross put this together. You know, you live in, you know, it's kind of a take on, who's the southern comedian? You know, you're a redneck if. Who is that?
Foxworthy.
Yeah, Jeff Foxworthy. Sheila sent this to me, but you know, you live in a police state. When the president allows the military to continuously harass a prisoner against whom no crime has been proven by interrupting him every 5 minutes of the day to ask, are you okay? Are you okay? And forces him to stand to attention naked at roll call. You know, you live in a police state when the same prisoner is barred from exercising in his cell and told where he may or may not put his hands when he goes to sleep at night. You know you live in a police state when the government punishes rather than honors whistleblowers who reveal crimes such as the U.S. massacre of civilians in Iraq. You know you live in a police state when wardens force pregnant women prisoners to deliver their babies while in chains. You know you live in a police state when the president orders the assassination of American citizens without bothering to arrest them and bring them to trial. You know you live in a police state when police forces across the country attack unarmed and nonviolent citizen protesters with pepper spray and clubs. You know you live in a police state when hundreds of thousands of citizens are rotting in prisons for victimless crimes such as smoking pot. And your country leads the world in incarcerations with 2.3 million people behind bars. And when hundreds of thousands of these prisoners are sexually assaulted. You know you live in a police state when working people who say overwhelmingly that they want to join a union cannot do so for fear of being fired, and in which the money earned by the poor is taken by the state and given to the rich. You know you live in a police state when your government makes terrible punishing wars on small countries after falsely accusing them of having weapons of mass destruction. Well, it, your company, possesses tens of thousands of the very same weapons. You know, you live in a police state when the president signs into law an act allowing him to arrest innocent citizens on his say-so and have the military imprison them indefinitely without charge, without legal counsel, without trial. You know you live in a police state when you are under surveillance by federal agencies such as the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, the CIA, among others, for your political views rather than the commission of any crime against the state. And when these agencies can access your medical records, your bank statements, your private papers, tap your telephone, question your neighbors, and employ and follow you around, and your employer and follow you around. You know you live in a police state when the military gets the biggest percentage of your tax dollars so it can spend as much for war as the next 20 nations combined while claiming it is attacking other countries in the name of peace and order. We'll be right back.
You might say I'm unlearned, but there's one thing I know. I'm younger than you. Even Jesus would never forgive what you do. Let me ask you one question. Is your money that good? Or will it buy you forgiveness? Do you think that it could? I think you will find when your death takes its toll, all the money you made will never buy back your soul.
Radio right from the left. It's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. And speaking of the war, the approaching war with Iran, did you read in the Times today, this Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, he was on 2-year-long deployments to Afghanistan. While he was there, he traveled the entire country. He patrolled with American troops in 8 provinces, and he returned to the U.S. a few months ago with a fervent conviction that the war and the occupation was going disastrously and that senior military leaders had not leveled with the American public. Oh, really? Here's another whistleblower, not unlike Mr. Beaujolais, who tried to warn about the Challenger disaster that he knew would occur and did. This guy, Lieutenant Colonel Daniel Davis, has been in the military since 1985. He said he has repeatedly seen top commanders falsely dress up a dismal situation. He consulted with his, He consulted with his pastor at the McLean Bible Church in Virginia, where he sings in the choir. Then he went home and watched his favorite movie, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. And then, late last month, Colonel Davis, who's 48, began an unusual one-man campaign of military truth-telling. He wrote two reports, one classified, the other unclassified, summarizing his observations on the, call it, the candor gap. That would be the truth gap. That would be the monstrous lies being told to the American people. Let's put it where it is, where it concerns Afghanistan. He briefed four members of Congress and a dozen congressional staff members. He spoke with a reporter for the New York Times. He sent his reports to the Defense Department's Inspector General. After he did all that, then he informed his chain of command what he had done. In an article summarizing his views titled Truth, Lies in Afghanistan, How Military Leaders Have Let Us Down, he asked, how many more men must die in support of a mission that is not succeeding? Now, this essay was published online Sunday in the Armed Forces Journal. You can get it if you want to. The Armed Forces Journal. That's the nation's oldest independent periodical on military affairs. And he says in the article, quote, no one expects our leaders to always have a successful plan, but we do expect, and the men who do the living, fighting, and dying deserve, to have our leaders tell us the truth about what's going on, end quote. Colonel Davis says his experience has caused him to doubt reports of progress in the war from numerous military leaders, including David Petraeus, who was the supreme commander in Afghanistan before he became the director of the CIA last June. And if you'll lie in an area of war where people are dying and being blown into bone fragments, you're going to lie when you head the CIA too, right? Or are you going to have some conversion on the road to, no pun intended, Damascus? And then decide that you're only going to tell the truth. Last March, for example, General Petraeus, he was then, testified before the Senate that the Taliban's momentum had been, quote, arrested in much of the country, end quote, and that progress was, quote, significant to allow Afghan forces to take the lead in combat by the end of 2014. Colonel Davis fiercely disputes those assertions and says few of U.S. troops believe them. He has no illusions about the impact his public stance may have on his career. He said in an interview last month, I'm going to get nuked. A spokesman for Mr. Petraeus, spokeswoman at the CIA, said, Petraeus, quote, has demonstrated that he speaks truth to power in each of his leadership positions over the past several years. His record should stand on its own, as should Lieutenant Colonel Davis's analysis, end quote. How long before you think, truth seeker, that Lieutenant Colonel Daniel L. Davis will have an accident? We'll have, you'll be traveling someplace, perhaps in a Jeep, and it'll go over an IED in Virginia. We'll be back in a moment. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. 25 before the hour. This hour is being sponsored by the Gandalf Society. That's the expert slayer of right-wing orcs, ditto heads, and the flying monkey right. The Gandalf Society. Thanks, Gandalf Society. So, I don't know if there's any connection between the ongoing murder of civilians in Afghanistan that once again this year has increased, as it has every year since our invasion and occupation. I think the latest figure was in Afghanistan, civilians killed in 2011 were over 3,000, and a huge percentage of those, not a majority, but a huge percentage were children. You know, installing democracy in a reluctant country is just a bitch. You know what I'm saying? A lot of collateral damage has to occur. A lot of children have to be butchered. A lot of drone airstrikes, because you got to get those Talibanis and those Al-Qaedis and, you know. But maybe there is a connection between that and the saber rattling over Iran and the fact that the U.S. Constitution is not as popular as it was, say, 25 years ago. According to the New York Times, in 1987, on the U.S. Constitution's bicentennial, Time magazine calculated that, quote, of the 170 countries that exist today, more than 160 have written charters modeled directly or indirectly on the U.S. Constitution, end quote. Here we are a quarter century later, and guess what? The picture looks very different. According to a new study by some studiers at Washington University in St. Louis and University of Virginia, the U.S. Constitution appears to be losing its appeal as a model for constitutional drafters in other places. And it says here, one of the professors said, among the world's democracies, constitutional similarity to the United States has clearly gone into free fall. Over the 60s and 70s, democratic constitutions as a whole became more similar to the U.S. Constitution, only to reverse course in the late 80s and 90s. And guess why? Guess why? The rights guaranteed by our Constitution are pretty skinny. You know, they really are, by international standards. And as the writer at the time, Adam Liptak, put it, they are frozen in amber. As Sanford Levinson wrote in 2006 in Our Undemocratic Constitution, quote, the U.S. Constitution is the most difficult to amend of any constitution currently existing in the world today. Other nations routinely trade in their constitutions, replacing them on average every 19 years. And oddly, Thomas Jefferson, in a letter to James Madison in 1789, it says here, said that every constitution, quote, naturally expires at the end of 19 years because, quote, the earth belongs always to the living generation, end quote. Thomas Jefferson. We have some idiosyncrasies. Only 2% of the world's constitutions protect a right to arm bears or bear arms. Our constitution is so out of step with the rest of the world in failing to protect, at least in so many words, a right to travel, the presumption of innocence, an entitlement to food, education, health care. No, we don't have that. We're capitalists, see? You either pull yourself up by your bootstraps or just goddamn die. I mean, you know, a right to food, a right to education, a right to health care. What? What? Many foreign judges also say they have become less likely to cite decisions by the United States Supreme Court because of what these foreign judges consider the Supreme Court's parochialism. Justice Michael Kirby of the High Court of Australia said in an interview, America is in danger, I think, of becoming something of a legal backwater. This justice in Australia said he looks instead to rulings in India, South Africa, and New Zealand. Aharon Barak, at one time the president of the Supreme Court of Israel, said, quote, Canadian law serves as a source of inspiration for many countries around the world. The Canadian Charter is both more expansive and less absolute. It guarantees equal rights for women and disabled people. It allows affirmative action, requires that those arrested be informed of the rights. On the other hand, it balances those rights against such reasonable limits, it says, as can be demonstrably justified in a free and democratic society. The Canadian Constitution is more focused on the rights, the human rights, the legal rights, than the American. Oh, God. So not only are we no longer, apparently, a model of the rules and regulations of self-governance, in other words, the Constitution, no longer do countries look to us for assistance in how to write their Constitution, and mainly because we don't guarantee any rights for anybody. Oh, you have the right to kill someone. You have a right to own a gun. But pretty much the First Amendment has been abrogated. The Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Eighth Amendment, the Tenth Amendment, haven't these all been just stomped on by Bush and now by Barack Obama? I mean, if they haven't been, tell me. If our Democratic president has not followed in the footsteps of the war criminals, Dick Cheney and George W. Bush, show me where that hasn't happened. Bush didn't sign a law, a National Defense Authorization Act, that said American civilians could be arrested by the military and held indefinitely with no charges, no legal representation, no recourse through the courts. That wasn't Bush that signed that. I'm sorry, you big Obama fans. That wasn't Bush or Cheney that signed that. It wasn't Nixon. It wasn't Reagan. It wasn't Bush the First. That was Barack Obama who signed that. Now, I don't know how you justify that. I really don't. I don't know how you say, well, but, how do you do that? I don't know. I just don't get it. I want to like Obama as much as the next American. I really, 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 really deep in my heart do. But when someone signs a bill into law, such as the National Defense Authorization Act, what are you supposed to do at that point? If you're an Obama supporter, seriously, I'm not trying to pick a fight here. Seriously, what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to say, oh, yeah, but, you know, sure, yeah, he signed it, but he also attached a signing statement. So he might as well have attached a fart for all the good it would do. I don't know. I'm not supposed to say this kind of stuff, though, because we're in the middle of an election season, you see. And as President Obama told Matt Lauer, he deserves a second term because he still has business to complete. Okay. Business to complete. But how do you do that without sounding like a crazed right-wing, mouth-breathing, booger-eating freak like Newt Gingrich or Rush Limbaugh? I mean, did you see that video of Limbaugh picking his nose? He was sitting in the owner's booth of the New England Patriots picking boogers out. Did you see that? It was on Oberman's program tonight. I don't know. But yeah, he was doing it. Russian citizen there picking boogers. Oh my God. What a slob. And America loves him. He loves him. Absolutely loves him. Ah, we'll be right back.
Go gentle into that good night. Rage, rage against the flying monkey right with Mike Malloy.
Ten before the hour. This hour has been sponsored by the Gandalf Society. The expert slayer of right-wing orcs, ditto heads, and flying monkey right-wingers. Thanks, Gandalf Society. I appreciate it. I'd like to join your society. How do I do that? From Patricia. Come on, Mike. From Patricia in Sacramento. She writes, Mike, regarding Obama, what we're just talking about, Mike, many Democrats have this illusion that former President Bill Clinton and current President Obama are for the working class. They are pretty much moderate Republicans. I'm so tired of hearing progressive radio talk show hosts telling me that if I just vote one more time for a Democrat, things will change. Well, I'm still waiting. Obama is quite the elegant speaker, and yes, he has introduced some good legislation. However, his appointments of Wall Street banksters as advisors to his administration illustrates where his support lies. Where was Obama when the unions in Wisconsin were fighting for their jobs? Democrats keep making excuses for Obama, just like Republicans made excuses for Bush. How are we any better if we cannot recognize that the Democratic Congress has become a corporate arm of the government? This election year, I'm sitting at home, and maybe you might think that's un-American, but I know that no one can change the system until it all collapses. If we don't dismantle these large banks and these large corporations who have destroyed economies here and around the world, then nothing will change. Our economic system is rotten to the core. So get rid of Wall Street, too. Then I will vote again. Patricia in Sacramento. Yeah, it's, you know, we pretty much all of us, we freedom-loving, God-fearing Americans, you know, we've all been inculcated. I don't care where you were brought up or what your economic situation or your religion or your, it really doesn't matter. If you're an American, if you've been here since you were a baby, you were brought up, you were brainwashed into believing my country right or wrong. That is not a whole lot different from the way all nationalistic attitudes are stuffed into people's brains, not just here, but other countries also. But the United States, you see, we were told to come over here by God, apparently, and destroy the native people and then bring over lots of slaves and build up huge white people fortunes. And, you know, steal half the country from the Spanish, the Mexicans, and blah, blah, blah. You know the history. Don't you? So, you know, we were all, certainly myself included, inculcated with this God bless America. We are blessed. We are exceptional. And I don't know, I don't know when that began to waver inside of me. Maybe when I was old enough to think. I don't know. But the first little cracks start to appear when you start to realize some of the atrocities that your country has committed against other nation states for no apparent reason. And then you find out what the non-apparent reason is. Money. Capitalism. Stealing someone else's resources. Stealing their labor force so you can dump your own. And it's very difficult, as I'm sure Patricia in Sacramento and Mike Malloy here in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains, and maybe you too, it's very difficult for us to become critics of our own country. The cowards and bastards in this country, that would be the right-wingers, wouldn't touch that with a 10-foot pole or Italian or Yugoslav with anything. Because, you know, if you criticize your own country, you're a dirty, rotten, filthy traitor. You're just a dirty, rotten, filthy traitor. But at what point do you criticize your country to the point where you can improve it? I mean, as long as it's jingoistic, you know, my country, right or wrong. Remember the bumper stickers, was it in the 80s? America, love it or leave it! Remember that? At what point do you recognize that your country, first of all, the real foundation of the country, genocide and slavery, and then from that point on, I mean, at what point do you allow yourself the freedom of mind to say, inside your own head first, that's where it has to begin, inside your own head, you know, it's not what they taught me. Why? My country has committed atrocities, massacres, genocides. Why? Unless we change. I mean, good Lord, what if? But then, huh? It's very difficult to get to that point, isn't it? Because like I said, who was it that said, give me a child till he's six, I'll give you a Catholic for life? You can say that about any religion, but you can also say it about any political system. That's why they had Hitler Youth. That's why they had the Young Pioneers. That's why they had the Red Guards. And that's why we have whatever the hell it is that we have here. Give me a child till he's six and I'll give you a capitalist for life. No, not quite. Not quite. So to the people who question the system, you know, just know that you're not alone. I know it feels like almost embarrassing sometimes when you're thinking to yourself, Jesus Christ, my country's doing this? To our own people, the leadership of my country now reserves for itself the right to disappear people? Like Solzhenitsyn wrote about in the Gulag? You're kidding me, really? Well, hold on to that thought. Because it's here and it's now. The question is, what are we going to do about it, right? We'll talk about that some more. All right, quick break. We'll be back. Stick around. We're going to raise a little more hell about the Susan Komen situation because there's more to the story. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour. You know, if you think, well, let me before I tell you that, let me just say this. Last week, Caterpillar, you know, the big heavy equipment manufacturing company, Caterpillar reported that its fourth quarter profit had risen by 60%. Fourth quarter, we're not talking about annual, we're talking about fourth quarter, one quarter only, to $1.5 billion. That was profit, $1.5 billion. That's $1,500 million, right? Last week, Caterpillar reported that its fourth quarter profit had risen by 60% to $1.5 billion. Okay. Now, on Friday, a couple of days after that, last Friday, Caterpillar announced that it would close a Canadian locomotive factory that employs about 700 people. And this came just about a month after locking out its unionized employees. It's not just in the United States that the cancer of capitalism can kick people to the curb. I'm sure you know that. But on New Year's Day, there was a lockout at a company called Electromotive Canada, which is a wholly owned piece of Caterpillar. The lockout came after contract negotiations that the Canadian Auto Workers Union said would have cut wages in half. Demands by the company that would have cut wages of people working there in half would have substantially reduced the benefits that these workers have been working for years to accrue, and would have altered the pensions for this company's 470 unionized workers. In other words, Caterpillar decided to go in and gut what workers at this company had struggled for so many years to put together. High productivity, good wages, nice retirement, and they were doing a great job. The company's demands were far outside the norm for Canadian contract negotiations. And this attracted widespread attention in Canada. It means nothing here, of course. Nothing here. Any more than a local strike in, say, Indiana will mean anything to the people in Windsor, Ontario, or Montreal, Quebec. But in Canada, this story caught a lot of attention. In a brief statement, this is according to the New York Times last week, in a brief statement, Progress Rail Services, that's the name of the company that Caterpillar owns. And by the way, Caterpillar acquired the parent company. This is a little confusing, but listen up now. Caterpillar acquired the parent company, Electromotive, in 2010. Progress Rail Services is part of Electromotive. It's all owned outright by Caterpillar. Okay, you got it? In a brief statement, Progress Rail Services, the Caterpillar unit that acquired Electromotive, a year and a half ago, said that production from the plant in London, Ontario, would be shifted to other operations, quote, in North and South America, end quote. North? Who would that be? Oh, that would be the U.S. Oh, it gets better. Hold on. Progress Rail Services recently opened a plant in Muncie, Indiana. Indiana. What recently happened? Yeah, I know the Super Bowl. But what happened last week in Indiana? Oh, that's right. The governor signed a so-called right to starve, a right to work law in Indiana. So unions no longer are effective there. Oh, my. And so this plant, isn't this a coincidence? It's going to open it has opened in Muncie, Indiana. That's where it builds passenger locomotives. Ah, Oh, and they announced plans last year to start making locomotives under the Electromotive brand in Brazil, Muncie, Indiana. The company, Electromotive, which is owned by Progress Rail Services, which is owned by Caterpillar. The company, Caterpillar, said that the previous contract terms covering workers in London, Ontario, made the factory inflexible and not competitive by international standards. Now, what did I start this with? Let me go back here and take a look. Oh, yeah. Caterpillar reported that its fourth quarter profit has risen by 60% to $1.55 billion profit. This is what capitalism does. They have this wonderful report. Woo! We made $1.5 billion in the last 3 months. Hot diggity damn. Let's go close a plant and fire people. Let's go make more money. Let's squeeze the worker even harder. Who do we have left? Well, we can't really rip them off in the U.S. too much anymore. Canada. Oh, that's right. Canada. They have unions there, don't they? Yeah, same ones they have here, actually. Oh, no, they're different. They're Canadian, eh? Let's go get them. And so they did. The company, Caterpillar, said the following. While the company's final offer to the union addressed those competitive disadvantages. Competitive disadvantages? Canadian workers? Caterpillar shows a $1.5 billion profit for 3 months. Competitive disadvantages? But I digress. While the company's final offer addressed those competitive disadvantages, the gulf between the company and the union was too wide to resolve, and as such, market conditions dictate that the company take this step. End quote. The step being shutting the factory, firing, just kicking to the street 670 people. Those are the workers. So you might say that represents about, what, maybe 2,500 individuals? And the ripple effect through the businesses in London, Ontario, how many would that be? Another 5,000, 8,000? All of a sudden, the dry cleaning shops, the restaurants, the coffee shops, the gas stations, all of a sudden, they have another 700 unemployed workers to deal with, which translates to another 2,500 unemployed people with no income. But you see, this is what capitalism does. This is family-friendly capitalism. Yeah, hey, we're not godless communism. No, no, no. We are Jesus and the flag and capitalism. Amen, amen. The Canadian flag, of course. The union, who just got its throat cut, said it was repeatedly told during the negotiations that the company did not intend to close the plant. But the union's president, Ken Luenza, said that a permanent shutdown was the plan all along. Mr. Luenza said, quote, from day one, we believed that Caterpillar was trying to provoke a crisis by forcing deep cuts that were not possible. You know, cuts in wages, cuts in benefits, cuts in retirement. This is what they do. This is what capitalism does. Worker, make my company profitable. Worker, make us productive. Worker, help us grab as much of the global market as we can. Now, worker, goodbye. Get your ass out of our factory.
Chrissy Ball?
Here come 50,000 watts of free speech. It's Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. 21 past the hour. So we're just a little bit more on this. Caterpillar decides to close an assembly plant in factory. I'm sorry, decides to close an assembly plant in Canada in factory. Yeah, okay. Have another cup of coffee, Mike. And the reason they do this after locking out the unionized workers, the reason they do so is because apparently they didn't make enough profit. Caterpillar made $1.5 billion last quarter, an increase of 60% in their profit. So they lock out 670 workers, and then they fire them and close the plant. The Minister of Labor for Ontario Province, Linda Jeffries, said, this is very unusual. She took the step of criticizing the company's position last Friday. She said, quote, "I'm extremely disappointed by the decision of Progress Rail Services," that's Caterpillar, "to close the electromotive plant in London. Despite our ministry's repeated offers of mediation, this company made very little effort to work out a fair and balanced deal with the workers," end quote. Now, for most of its history, Electromotive, the subsidiary of Caterpillar, was owned by General Motors. Electromotive is based in LaGrange, Illinois, USA. The London, Ontario assembly plant had been its only one for several years. And on its website, Electromotive describes the London operation, the London, Ontario operation, as a, quote, state-of-the-art plant, end quote. So what's the only conclusion you can draw? They locked the employees out and waited. In the meantime, down in Indiana, an anti-union, anti-labor, anti-American piece of legislation was working its way through the Indiana House of Delegates, or House of whatever the hell it is in Indiana. And that piece of legislation was another one of these so-called right-to-work laws that says, hey, look, we're not going to ban unions because that might get us into trouble. What we're going to do is say that if you are not a union member and a union happens to have some kind of a deal going in a factory, you don't have to pay dues, but you still get the benefits. Ha, 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 union, take that. Well, there's no way for a union to survive that. So the legislation in these right-to-work states, so-called, is targeted at destroying unions. So this is weaseling, sliming its way through the Indiana government. And meanwhile, up in London, Ontario, the owners of this company are just waiting. You can see them in the movie, tapping their fingers. Da-da-da, da-da-da-da-da. How much longer before they complete the deal in Indiana? Oh, it's getting close? Okay. Da, 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 da. Finally, when the deal goes through, the plant is shut. And Progress Rail Services says, well, you know, we just opened a plant in Muncie, Indiana, where we do pretty much the same thing. So guess what? Guess where we're moving this company from? London, Ontario, Canada. We're going to move it to Muncie, Indiana, USA, for a very simple reason. The workers in London, Ontario, Canada are organized and they're members of a union and they do great work and they're productive and everything is wonderful. But you know what? We're Caterpillar. We only made last quarter $1.5 billion in profit. That's not enough. We want more. So what we're going to do is just kick 700 workers to the curb. Screw them. We don't give a damn. That's Canada, your goddamn welfare government anyway, aren't you? Har, har, har. We're moving to Muncie. Har, har, har. Arg, arg. We're pirates, don't you know? Aye, that's what we're doing, mateys. We're moving to Muncie, Indiana, where we can get the labor almost free. As far as Canada, to hell with you, mateys. To hell with you. Goodbye. Adios. Thanks for all your whitefish or whatever you call that stuff. We're gone. My, my, my. Workers of the world, unite. The only thing you have to lose are your chains. Who said that? Was that Groucho Marx? Was that Harpo? Zeppo? Gummo? It'll come to me.
Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody else's bubbles, everything is gonna be alright. Everything is gonna be alright. Saw the boss come walking down along the factory line, saying, boys, we have to tighten up our belts. But he didn't look any thinner than he did a year ago, and I wonder just how hungry that man felt. He knows it ain't hard to get along with somebody else's troubles. They don't make him lose any sleep at night. Just as long as fate is out there busting somebody.
Mike Malloy Show. Talk radio matters here.
Yeah, it does. 25 before the hour. So, not that the Canadians don't feel the lash of predatory capitalism. It's just that the Canadian political economic system is built differently from the way it's built in this country, so that when the capitalist lash does go across the backs of 700 Canadian workers all at one time, it warrants, you know, it's kind of like the man bites dog story thingy. You know, it warrants a report, and that's what we just did. But Caterpillar and its subsidiary, they buy a company and they sell it and fire everybody, and a very productive company, and then they move it to a state in the U.S. that just went to the so-called right to work. And they send some of it down to Brazil because everybody knows that Brazilians will work for practically nothing. Someday, seriously, someday, there will be an uprising of degree and an intensity that you and I can't even imagine. Because at some point, people will finally decide that the system is so punishing to just normal people. No one asked to be born. No one asked to be handed the circumstances. They're handed at birth. Everybody tries to provide themselves and their families with food, clothing, shelter, medical care, and maybe beyond that a little bit, you know, entertainment, education, knowledge seeking, and standing over everything with its legs spread from pole to pole is this huge, monstrous beast bastard called capitalism that will let a few slip through the keyhole and the rest will stay where they are and shut their goddamn mouths and work until they're dead or until capitalism kicks them to the curb. What a system, eh? Wouldn't you think, our Canadian brothers and sisters, what a system. Moving right along, Rick Santorum has an opinion on the Susan G. Komen Foundation's reversal on the Planned Parenthood decision. Ta-da! This shows you, once again, not that you need this over and over and goddamn over again, how right-wingers, Republicans, punks, religious fanatics like Rick Santorum lie through their teeth. Their entire philosophical foundation is based on a lie, so there should be no surprise here. But it always surprises me. He said, quote, I don't believe breast cancer research is advanced by funding an organization that does abortions where you've seen ties to cancer and abortions, end quote. Now, he said that on Fox News Sunday yesterday. In fact, why bother? But I will. A study in 4 years ago, 5 years ago, a study published by the Archives of Internal Medicine, which has a hell of a lot more insight into women's health issues than this goddamn Rick Santorum and his corpse babies. The Archives of Internal Medicine, studying 105,716 women, found no link between breast cancer and abortions. I mean, what happens if you have your appendix out? Does that give you brain tumors? What happens if you have a hangnail removed? Are you going to develop melanoma? You crazy bastards. And as far as Planned Parenthood, again, all together now, 3, 2, 1. Abortion services account for 3% of Planned Parenthood's activities. 97% of what Planned Parenthood does is not about abortion. Cancer screening and prevention accounts for 5 times as much activity, or 16% of Planned Parenthood's activities. Santorum went on. It's not enough that he opens his mouth and stuffs his size 12s down his own goddamn throat, but he has to keep going. Quote, so I don't think it's a particularly healthy way of contributing money to further the cause of breast cancer. What? Further? No, you dumb bastard. They're trying to not further the cause of breast. Oh, Jesus, these people. But he went on, but that's for private organizations like Susan G. Komen to make that decision. You're absolutely right, Santorum. It's up to Susan G. Komen. They can do anything they want with the money they collect from the public. As long as they abide by the rules set down for nonprofit organizations, they can do anything they want. Even hire some goddamn right-wing loon like Karen Handel to then cause Susan B. Komen Foundation its biggest PR crisis in the history of this organization. There will never be another bigger one. We don't know if Susan Komen can survive with all their marches and their ribbons and their teddy bears. And you can thank Karen Handel. Karen Handel. Oh, yeah, there's Huffington Post has this out. According to people within the Komen Foundation, well, it says that Komen for the Cure, the nation's leading anti-breast cancer charity, has insisted that its since-reversed decision to pull funding from Planned Parenthood arose from a routine change in criteria for grant eligibility that had nothing to do with abortion politics. Oh, of course it didn't, even though they said it did, and then they said it didn't. Oh, that's right, not abortion politics, but, you know, if an organization is under investigation, even if that investigation is a Mickey Mouse operation put together by Karen Handel's buddy in the U.S. House, it all works very tightly. However, a Komen insider told Huffington Post yesterday that Karen Handel Comin's staunchly anti-abortion vice president for public policy, was the main force behind the decision to defund Planned Parenthood and the attempt to make that decision look non-political. Karen Handel is a goddamn liar, as are all right-wing politicians. At their convenience, they lie about everything. There is no holding back with these vermin. Karen Handel is a stinking liar. And not only does she lie, she cloaks her lying in her religious right righteousness that is poison, that is filth. Karen Handel is a liar, as is all, every right-wing politician. There are no exceptions. Not one. Ever. Show me one. The source inside Karen Handel, I'm sorry, inside the Komen for the Cure, the source who requested anonymity for professional reasons, well, I hope to shout, the source told Huffington Post, quote, Karen Handel was the prime instigator of this effort, and she herself personally came up with the investigation criteria. She's the one that invented the lie. Karen Handel. Oh, I'm a good little Christian. Let me see if I can come up with a whole bunch of goddamn lies here to pervert and prostitute this organization to try to get Planned Parenthood, which is also staffed by decent Christian women, defunded. Karen Handel is a pig. Don't send me emails about quit demonizing pigs, Malloy, okay? The source inside Coleman said, told Huffington Post further, Handel said, if we just say it's about investigations, we can defund Planned Parenthood and no one can blame us for being political. End quote. Karen Handel. Now, if it's not true, Handel, you slime ball, deny it. Deny it! Emails between Komen leadership on the day that Planned Parenthood decision was announced, which were reviewed by Huffington Post under the condition they not be published, confirms the source's description of Handel's sole, quote, authority, end quote, in crafting and implementing the Planned Parenthood policy. In other words, the lies, the filthy lies from Karen Handel, the good Christian church lady, who tried to run for governor of Georgia. We didn't want the good Christian church lady. We wanted a stupid ass like the governor we have now. What's his name? Nathan Deal, who was under investigation in the U.S. House, almost, until he resigned and ran. Yeah, I love Georgia politics. So Karen Handel, the Christian lady. What does it say in the Ten Commandments, Karen? Thou shalt not lie! Before the hour. So the good Christian church lady who ran for governor of Georgia after being Secretary of State and trying to ruin the voting system in this country, Karen Handel. The good Christian church lady gets a job as vice president for public policy at Susan G. Komen and immediately begins her construct of lies and deceit and deception in order to defund Planned Parenthood, an organization. You know, if Karen Handel gets breast cancer at some point, wouldn't it be ironic if at that point the only place she might have to go for any kind of screening would be to Planned Parenthood, because eventually Karen Handel is going to find herself unemployed. She is now a very hot property, although, on the other hand, a lot of anti-abortion, crazy, good Christian people will probably hire her because she fits their criteria, among which are she's a goddamn liar. In order to be a good Christian Republican these days, you must be a liar. That is requirement number one. How well do you lie? Handel was pretty good at it, but she got caught. The source that talked to Huffington Post about the filth that is Karen Handel went on to say, quote, "The Komen organization has been dealing with the Planned Parenthood issue for years. And, you know, some right-wing groups would organize a protest or send out a mailing every now and then, but it was on a low simmer. What Karen Handel's been doing for the past 6 months is ratcheting up the issue with the Komen leadership. Every time someone would even mention a protest, she would magnify it, pump it up, exaggerate it. She's the one that kept driving this issue." End quote. Now, of course, Karen Handel, being a liar, and Komen president, not the CEO, but the president, Elizabeth Thompson, neither of these women would respond to requests for comment by Huffington Post. Of course they won't respond. Karen Handel? She's probably getting herself lawyered up right now because she's going to find herself in some trouble somewhere, somehow. You know it's coming. But the source inside the Komen organization continued and said Karen Handel submitted a final version of the new grant criteria to Komen leadership in November. That was the one where Karen Handel decides to come up with lies and deceit. And the board approved it in December. This was before the board understood that Karen Handel was working the other side of the fence to set up the very investigation with a right-wing Christian member of the U.S. House so that she could then pull the string and say, "See, Planned Parenthood is under investigation. Yee-hee!" However, when this was all submitted to the board, the Komen top public health official, Molly Williams, resigned on the spot. The source said, quote, "It was apparent to everyone in the organization that Karen was doing everything in her power to defund Planned Parenthood, and that's why Molly Williams quit," end quote. But keep in mind, the criteria did gain the support of Komen's top executives and board, because they are willing to submit themselves to the pressure from right-wing fascists in this country, Christian fascists. And in an interview with Huffington Post, board member John Raffaele, a Democratic lobbyist and a supporter of Planned Parenthood's mission, took responsibility for the changes. As the only lobbyist on the board, he told Huffington Post, he should have anticipated the political fallout. Raffaele said, quote, "Honestly, I didn't think it through well enough. We don't want to be a pro-choice or pro-life. We want to be pro-cure. We screwed up, I'm saying. We failed to keep abortion out of this. And we owe the people in the middle who only care about breast cancer, who have raised money for us, an apology." End quote. John Raffaele, who says he didn't anticipate the fallout from the lies put together by Karen Handel and her co-conspirator in the U.S. House, Cliff Stearns of Florida, Gainesville, Florida. Poor Mr. Raffaele, you didn't think that a conspiracy of lies would cause a backlash. And you're a Democratic lobbyist? What the hell do you lobby for? Why don't you retire, Mr. Raffaele? And also, let's keep in mind who was hired. The guess is that Komen founder Nancy Brinker, the one who was all over television with her strange, what the hell was with her hair? I'm sorry. You shouldn't attack somebody's personal appearance. But listen, Karen Brinker or Nancy Brinker, somebody ought to say to her, no, Nancy, don't stuff your head up on your hair up on top of your head like that. You look like I don't know. You look like a palm tree or something. But never mind. Anyway, Nancy Brinker hired her friend, Ari Fleischer, to help her handle the crisis. Oh, good choice there, Nancy. But Fleischer told Huffington Post that he had no part in guiding Komen's strategy on this issue. Oh, no, not me. No. Ari the liar, the one who stood in front of the American public for months, lying us into a vicious, brutal war with death and destruction and chaos, and people would have their brains shot away. And this miserable worm is the one who winds up advising Nancy Brinker. I wouldn't contribute a goddamn bottle cap to the Nancy Komen organization at this point. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Or the Susan Komen for the Cure organization. What did I say, Nancy? These people drive me insane. I'll see you tomorrow. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.